back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively at Father and Daughter. We are at Curio Wellness. We are in the beautiful Timonium, just south of Timonium Road and York Road. We are joined by Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Gina Shock of the Go-Go's, and of House of Shock, and of Dundalk. Michael Bronfine is here. He is the CEO and founder of all things Curio Wellness and Father and Daughter. And his daughter, Wendy, who is the Chief Brand Officer. We call her Chief Cannabis Officer around here, with a lot of talking points. Drummer meets drummer. See, I try to put people together, right? So Curio and Far and Daughter have been sponsoring us, along with our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I've been giving out the these are scented gingerbread. There's one for you. Good luck. Ticket here, $500. One for you. It's Purple Friday, so I got to find a purple one around here somewhere. But we have our O Snaps, our friends at Window Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare. They put this together to bring people together, and I thought, holiday event. I told Wendy I want to do the show here. I wanted to meet you. I wanted to talk about the plant and wellness and bombs and flower and vapes and like all of that stuff. And then she told me you're a rock and roll drummer and you did rock and roll fantasy camp. And I'm like, oh, Gina Shock and I, we had a drink on my birthday. Well, let's put this together. And I had Wendell. I'm like, Gina, you coming home for Christmas? Yeah. I said, got any problem coming to a cannabis dispensary? She's like, no, I got arthritis. I'm a drummer. I need help. I need to get some stuff. And I said, well, this is a relation, and you brought drum pads here for me today, and we got all this stuff here together. So there's a drummer in every corner, Gina Shock. Everybody wants to be a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer.
Yeah, but Michael here is like the real deal because he's a jazz player, and I don't understand it, but I have a great
You can't play jazz?
I don't think so. I've never really tried.
It's punk rock drummer.
Weird time signatures and stuff, and so you know, you go from one thing to another, and I'm like, wait a minute, how'd that happen? Because you're a badass, you can read. I don't know how to read music, and I never took lessons. I'm self-taught. Just would put headphones on when I come home from school and play with my favorite records, and that's how I taught myself. But I sure as hell, it wouldn't have hurt if I'd have done what you did.
Well, honestly, what you did is what I always aspired to do, but I didn't have the courage to do, which was really pursue my drumming to a professional career, because the home I came, the place I grew up in, was really about, you know, having a profession and so forth. And my father was a superb musician. He was actually offered a full scholarship to Juilliard.
Wow.
And his father wouldn't let him take it because his father was an immigrant and felt that was no future for his son. So he said, you can go anywhere you want as long as it's the University of Maryland, and you can study anything you want as long as it's an accountant, and I'll see you in 4 years. Mm. And he spent all 4 years actually playing as a sideman to make money. Like, I worked in a dining hall. He played every Friday and Saturday night somewhere in the Washington area, either drums, trombone, or piano, one of the three. And he was a brilliant, brilliant musician. When he was 50, he decided, to hell with life. I don't care that I'm a CPA. I don't care that I'm, you know, kind of this corporate guy. He organized a 24-piece swing band with a guy named Bing Miller.
And I love swing music, Michael. That's just one of my favorite kinds of, my favorite genre, swing. Yeah, love it.
Me too. In fact, I kept a large number of his records for my vinyl collection, and sitting on the floor of my study home right now is Harry James, Stan Kenton, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Benny Goodman, all records that he had that are all from the late 50s and early 60s, and he kept them in great shape, and I put them on, list a satin doll, and go, wow, that's just, that's
so
real music.
I thought he was going to tell me it was Keith Moon and Bonham, you know, like, you had a different inspiration
from drummers,
right? Completely
different.
Yeah, yes.
You know, 49 was the biggest year for big band music. 1949.
Was it really?
Yes.
Well, that was kind of my father's prime of his, you know, musical interests. And, you know, it was great growing up as a kid. We had one of those big stereo things in the basement and with a, you know, a record player.
Drop the needle.
And we had a piano and, you know, and just put it on and play along with it.
I mean, to have that around, to have access to all that.
Yeah.
Would be,
when did you get a drumstick?
I would save up my allowance, and I would buy instruments. And I bought a bass, and I bought guitar, and you know, took lessons for a minute, and I just couldn't deal with it. So I thought, oh, I'll try drums. Mm-hmm. And so I bought them, and I put the headphones on, and it was like, it just happened. It was, just came out of my limbs and to the sticks and on the drum heads, and it was, this is what I'm supposed to do, because I don't have to think. My body just does it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I can play guitar a little bit, play bass a little bit, play a little bit around piano, but I use those to write with, to write songs with.
Right.
But drumming was my calling for sure. You know, that was my gift. Everybody's got a gift, at least one gift.
Mine's talking.
Yeah. And you're very good at that, too, Nestor. Yeah, Daddy, yeah.
Gina Shocks here, Michael Brown Fine, Wendy Brown Fine. We're a Foreign Daughter doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We have had crab cakes. I just want to make sure everybody knows. They're like, hey, why are you not doing a crab cake tour? We had the Clean Cuisine and Jerry, so you can go listen to that.
It was really good. I scarfed one
delicious.
Down. Delicious. Oh, it was good.
Darren Owens Mills, yeah. Clean Cuisine, go find them. You said something before we got so much going on here. Your kid drums and your fantasy camp and all of this stuff. But you mentioned injury. You know, Johnny Allen's in the House of Shock, from what I know.
Yeah.
Apparently he plays some drums.
Yes.
John's one of my greatest friends in the whole world, and they're playing tomorrow night. His original band, Child's Play, is playing at Soundstage. They're bringing all the original members together that are alive. Maybe tomorrow night we're going to do that.
Yes.
Taking them for some Italian food. So Johnny and I, we get together socially like in the real world. Not Gene and I do too, but John and I were talking, and he sat in on your band around this time last year. Last year, she was coming up for Christmas. She wanted to do a show. Wendell hits me and says, do you know a guitar player? I'm like, yeah. So I gave her Ed Lauer. Do you know a bass player? No, yeah, I do. So I gave her Steve Porth. Do you know a drummer? She's like, who's that cute boy you did the show with? Didn't he play the drums? And I said, it's John Allen, you know, and he's a cute boy. He looks a little like Keith Urban, right?
Oh, you bet.
Yeah, see, she got a crush on him. So I've known Johnny forever. And she put a band together. So John hadn't played the drums because he sings in his bands now. He sings in Stone Horses. And he said from playing the drums with Child's Play and playing with your, he said it hurts. That he was a young, I mean, he was a rock drummer.
He hit some hard.
He hit some hard. And he talked about being in pain. He had a plantar fasciitis thing with his foot last year. It was killing him.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never heard these war stories of your body, your little body, and hands and sticks and all of that stuff that Tommy Lee's doing. I got football players that got straighter fingers than that lineman.
Yeah, I have arthritis in, you know, my hands, my wrists, my knees.
Well, this is what we're picking. I've never had Michael on. I've never talked to you. I know of your legend. I know many people that know you. You took this illicit plant, weed, reefer madness, all this. You were legitimately in the pharmaceutical business, could have been selling opioids for the rest of your... You decided to do this. I don't know you, but I know a million people know you. You developed stuff for broken down Hall of Fame rock and roll drummers and non-rock and roll Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
You walked in on crutches, dude.
Right.
You know, literally. Talk about the science of this as though we're 12-year-old kids in Dundalk and they're telling us, don't smoke that, don't do this, it's bad for you, reefer, drug... Nancy Reagan, all of that you're fighting uphill for me being here today. 10 years ago, if you would have said to me, I'd be sitting in a cannabis dispensary hosting a radio show
in Timonium,
I would have said, what jail cell would I be in, right? Like, literally.
Right.
It's about damn time.
See, all right. See, that's what I'm talking. So, give me your story, because she doesn't know it, and I really don't know it. I've never asked you before.
Well, the truth is when Wendy, it was really Wendy's idea. I had no interest in it whatsoever. None.
No, Wendy.
She has never told me this.
No.
She's being humble now.
So I had retired from a private equity fund that I was running with some other people in 2012, and was happy, somewhat happy, doing nothing down in Florida, managing our family investments, playing golf, and so forth. Because I thought, you know, I've worked 70 hours a week for the last 50-some years.
What was your business? Tell everybody your original business.
Well, my original
business. Because our audience knows your business.
Well, my original business was Neighbor Care Pharmacies, which we took from one store in Baltimore to the second largest provider of long-term care pharmacy and managed care pharmacy in the United States. We started in 80, and we sold it in 96, and I ran it for the large public company through 99, and then I decided to leave. But
That's why I haven't heard of it in a long time.
Yeah.
It was a thing in the 80s and 90s. Everybody knew NeighborCare.
Yes. We had a very large retail division, but that was really the smallest part of our business. That was about a $100 million business. We had a billion-dollar pharmacy company that operated in 39 states,
really?
Providing pharmaceuticals to people in nursing homes and assisted living.
Oh.
It's called Institutional Pharmacy, and... that business, like this one, what we focused on is how do we delight the customer? How do we help the patient who's sitting in that nursing home bed have a better life experience? And how do we help the nurse do it with greater ease and less administrative burden? And we came up with a lot of novel ideas. We used information technology long before anyone else did, kind of patched it together, and it allowed us to create great value for the customer, a great experience for the patient, and a lot of growth for our company. And so it was a great lesson. But it's always, for me, been about how do I create something disruptive? How do I innovate? I don't want to be part of any pack. That's not interesting to me. I want to lead the pack. And so in any business that I've been involved in, whether it's been software, whether it's been healthcare technologies, whether it's been my private equity firm, we kind of look out into the future and say, what's the landscape going to look like 5 years from now? And how do we build today what people are going to want 5 years from now in a way that gets us there before everyone else and allows us to then take that market-leading position and leverage it into more and more innovation? And that's exactly what we've done here at Curie over the last 6 years.
So it's weed, it's illegal, it's 10 years ago. My daughter has an idea. They're doing it in Colorado. Maybe you should pick this up, Wendy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how do you broach this over Thanksgiving dinner with Dad? Like, we're going to do this. It's federally illegal, but one day we'll be sitting in Timonium and it's going to be cool and I'll have a go-go shirt on, right? Like, literally, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it happened fairly organically. So first, there was a law that passed here that said a program was coming, and I saw that as a news snippet. And sent it over his way, like, this is interesting. But then, you know, we ended up in Colorado Memorial Day weekend of 2014. They had recently become adult use. So we saw what was going on. We already had that sort of back of our mind of what was coming to Maryland. Then there was a trade association for our industry had a conference the next month. I went back, did due diligence, came home, reported at the kitchen table. That from then on, it was lots of conversations with different people to say, you know, snake oil, not, do we go forward, do we not? And we really didn't have like a hard line moment where we said yes, no. It was just that incrementally everything kept pushing it forward until there was this sort of nights and weekends team that was from who it was us and our COO as well. And then we applied a year later about we heard and then it's that was August of 2016 that we were like ago.
It feels like 5 minutes ago, August of 16. That's
yeah,
a long
ago. It was a long time ago. But really the defining moment for me was a phone call I made to a friend of mine who at the time was the head of neuroscience at Hopkins, Dr. Solomon Snyder. Truly a genius, won the Albert Lasker Award, won the Jonas Salk Award, and came in as a finalist for the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973. Why? He discovered the receptors in the brain to which opioids respond. That's his claim to fame. And then he developed a lot of different drugs from that. And in fact, today at Hopkins, it's the Solomon Snyder Department of Neuroscience. And Sol retired last year. But when Wendy kept hocking me and sending me more data and telling me more of this, and when I'm like, I don't want to do this. I'm not interested in pot, right? And then finally, she just, you know, I've raised three relentless children, which I'm very proud of. They have their father's persistence, which is, I think, you know, a great trait, but it's because I have it. But nonetheless, I said, you know what? There's somebody I know who just is so smart that he'll know exactly if this is BS or it's really something worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll never forget, I was standing outside of the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas because I had gone there for a pharmaceutical convention, and I called Sol, and he happened to call me back as I was walking to get a cab to go back to my hotel, and we chatted. I said, Sol, I got a really kind of odd question for you, so don't think less of me when I ask you. He says, okay, what is it? I said, what do you think of marijuana? Just like that. He goes, this was exact words, it's a miracle plant. I said, what? He said, yeah. He says it's been vilified and falsified by the U.S. government for political objectives, but there's no truth to anything they say. It's not addictive, and it's when you get away from the psychoactive part of it, which is effective for pain attenuation, there are amazing little particles of something in there that we don't understand called cannabinoids, but they're very much aligned with the endocannabinoid system, which is kind of the control system in our body. And it was his belief that there was a tremendous symbiotic relationship between the evolution of this plant and the evolution of the human being. And that's why it had been used for 5,000 years in Eastern medicine for medicinal purposes. I mean, it's not like marijuana was new. You can go back to, you know, Japanese emperors who have notes in journals about how they used it for various ailments. And so once he said that to me, I'm like, if Sol Snyder thinks this is good, then maybe I ought to learn a little bit. And that led to a lunch we had, which turned into, hey, Sol, if I wanted to put together a company that truly was going to do research and discovery and develop products that would have benefits to humans, would you help me? He said, I would. He said, in fact, I'll chair the committee and I'll help you recruit the other scientists. So that's what we did. We recruited five other world-class scientists. You can go on our website and see who they are. And my wife and I, who funded the investment and the due diligence, we hired them and started paying them before we won the license because we wanted to get ahead on the research. As it turned out, that probably wasn't necessary because since then, we're the only one that does research. So it's not like we had any competitors to this day. I think there may be other companies in America that are spending the money that we're on basic science research and product development and clinical studies in cannabis, but I don't know who they are.
I went over to your facility a couple weeks ago, and we're walking through, and it's like, I said, it was like Dr. Pepper. He's a doctor. She's a doctor. I mean, it was just an amazing, and I think for anybody from old, I'm 55, I grew up in Dundalk, her parents felt the same way my parents felt about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, that's where it was.
It's a devil's brew.
Right, and I've been here for the last 6 hours. I've been a medical patient for a number of years. My son, my wife had cancer. We did all the Sanjay Gupta, I always say, was the first time it sort of came into my living room like, they're doing this in Colorado? I go to Colorado, you know? And the science part of it and the kinds of people and the cross-section, black, white, young, old, rich, poor, east, west, they have just been through here in the last 6 hours taking lottery tickets, and what you see is what your sister said when she came on, the only one that I've heard say, Marylanders really wanted this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the first thing you should know.
Americans want it.
Americans want it.
Yeah, you
Americans
bet.
Want it.
Well, you're in California, right? So this isn't like all new where you are in San Francisco, right?
It just makes sense. Come on.
Well, what's interesting is, and one of the reasons that I actually became curious was, having been in the pharmaceutical industry since 1980, I had become somewhat dismayed at the way the industry was working and the lack of science that was one to many. There was more and more focus on orphan drugs, on very expensive compounds. I just learned, for example, today about a new drug that came out that will help women with postpartum depression, right? It's a 2-week treatment. How much do you think they're charging for it?
$5,000.
$16,000 for
That's
2 weeks. That makes no sense, you know, and it's taxing society. And frankly, there's many parts of the world where medicine doesn't require the mechanism of action understanding in order for people to prescribe it and use it effectively. But American or Western medicine has really moved to a mechanism of action kind of attitude. That means if we don't understand what the chemical does in your body, then we can't prescribe it and we won't really use it, right? Even though it may be effective. And interestingly, as we began this journey and I started talking to physicians, because I know a lot of physicians, I've been in the pharmacy business for all these years, it was amazing to me how many of them said, you know, I know it's not legal, but I got patients that they're not responding to this or that or the other. I would definitely try it. And so there were some early adopter physicians who were kind enough to give us some ideas about different things we could do. But then we looked
like
at
nausea, probably, when my wife had cancer, right? The things that go into these patches that she was wearing when she was battling leukemia and getting a bone marrow transplant. You know, the doctors that were at Hopkins were like, whatever you do, don't smoke it because your lungs can't take it right now. But they believed in the science. So they believed in the medicinal quality.
Well, look, what we're trying to do is close that gap between the mythological past and the scientific future, right? Because there's the one thing that I find unappealing about this industry, there's too much mythology, right? Back in the day, we did it this way. We did it in our basement. This one whispered to the plants. All this stuff that, frankly, if you're going to create a legitimate industry where people are going to rely on your products for their well-being, you know, and we believe that that leading the pursuit of wellness is really what our business is about. So we like to say we're creating safe, because cannabis is safe, effective, it meets exactly what you're supposed to do for you, and reliable, does exactly the same every time. And that's really been what's given us our place in the market, because if you buy our chew, you buy our flower, you buy our vape, you buy anything we make, you get exactly the same effect and the same product every single time. How? Because we use FDA manufacturing standards just like drug companies do, so that the quality checks, the formulations, all the different elements are not subject to kind of whims. They're highly and precisely calibrated and managed by someone who's a QA tech watching a manufacturing tech watching a packaging tech. So the
amount, and oversight.
Yeah, oversight. So we have our own labs in the building, so we do our own testing, even though we send it out to third parties who validate it for purity and for potency and so forth and cleanliness, and which is great, because I'm a big supporter of the safety factor. And the fact, I do think there should be third party validation. Although in the pharmacy world today, you know, pharmacy companies don't have any third party validator, but this is such a new industry and there's a variety of different competencies. We need that to really bring this industry into the modern time by building credibility, by assuring quality, and frankly, effectiveness, right? Look, last time I smoked weed before we went to Colorado was when I was at the University of Maryland, and I woke up one day and learned that my roommate was a pot dealer, and he came in with a suitcase full of pot. I didn't really smoke very much pot then, but he said, if you help me put this in baggies, I'll give you as much as I want. Sure. And so, got the triple beam balance out. We spent a Sunday night, two big Pullman cases. We turned into what's him, and he did whatever he did with it, and I got a couple of free ounces. And that cannabis or that marijuana or that weed or that pot or whatever you want to call it is not what is available today. What we grow and others grow is highly, highly curated. It's based on the best and latest plant science, just like, you know, DuPont uses when they grow plants for pharmaceuticals. So I don't know if you've been to our facility.
I have, yes.
But it's state of the art. Everything's automated. There's automated agronomy systems. There are automated environmental systems. There are automated management systems. And they're all integrated. So our head...
I called it Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
It was like a Willy Wonka factory.
Right.
It was amazing.
Yeah. So you know, that's a very big investment. But our view was, if you're going to go big and go right. And do it in a way where you could create standards. And frankly, you know, for me, this is a family business. And my family name's associated with it. And so it's really important to us that people feel comfortable and that we build trust and we make a promise and we keep it. And so the way we run the business is about keeping that promise and making sure that things that we say they're going to do, they're going to do. We then clinically test them and so forth. And so we have a pretty significant body of data now after 6 years of doing this of things that, frankly, no one else has. And, for example, our sleep product has two U.S. patents on it. Only two patents in the country issued for a cannabis product. We have a GI product that's about to get a patent. We've gotten the early notice of it. And we've got four other products that are under review now. Well, why is that important? Because one of the things that I learned going from distributing pharmaceuticals or medicinal products to making them is that it's not about the agent, it's about how you get it to the spot, right? So if you want something for your gut, right, rubbing it on your tummy isn't going to be effective, or smoking, it's not going to be effective, right? But if you can take a pill that gets ingested in a certain way in the part of the digestive system that you want, then you get a really specific response that you can measure and predict. And so our chemists, our pharmacologists, our scientists work really hard to kind of figure that chemistry out and that physiology out. And the one thing that I really have found, and this has been an epiphany for me, this plant is very body friendly. The physiology of cannabis, or the safety and the efficacy of cannabis, is unlike any other pharmaceutical that I've ever come about, right? So I'm on a product called Comfort GI that's been out for 2 years now. And because of a number of factors, you know, my lungs, my kidneys, my liver, they've all been tested multiple times as a part of a trial that I did before we launched this product. Perfect. No effect whatsoever.
Side effects are really...
No side effects. Right. No adverse effects whatsoever. And here's a great irony, right? My family has been very fortunate and has done well in the pharmaceutical industry. My mother was killed by a physician who gave her an adverse drug in a hospital in Florida, and it destroyed her liver, and she died within 6 months, right? Oh, so okay. isn't that ironic? Well, if she'd have been on cannabis, it couldn't have killed her because it can't kill you. So there's the thing that I find most absurd is when you go back and look at the government over the last 70 years, they were only funding research that was negative. even if it was false, if somebody would write a grant and say, I'm going to prove why cannabis makes your hair turn green, they'd fund it.
Well, everything sort of stopped with Nixon, right?
Yeah.
Literally, the last 50 years, right?
Yeah, well, Nixon decided to use cannabis as a tool against hippies and African Americans and Hispanics that he thought were against the Vietnam War. And that's really why the drug got classified, scheduled to Schedule 1. It wasn't Schedule 1 in 1969. So a lot of the problems that were created by that move and his vindictiveness against that group because they weren't supporting him. And it just mushroomed from there. And then when you have the government lying about things, which they did, their scientists were providing fallacious materials. There were studies that were rigged. And that's all factually proven now. That's not me speculating on it. It just created a different dynamic. And now we have just the opposite. We're about to announce a major research collaborative with a major university that's taken us years to get to because, not that they didn't want to do it because they did, but we finally gotten to the point where the government is willing to let them do it without sanctioning them or threatening them or anything else. So we think there's going to be a significant acceleration in our research and our discovery and our new product portfolio over the next few years as we launch this. We're going to announce it probably in January. I can't say what it is now, but I've been working on this with my colleagues in our scientific group since 2018. So that's how long it took to go from people wanted to do research with us, legitimate research, basic science research, or other types of clinical research, to finally in probably February of 2024, we'll finally actually be able to do it. So we've been persisting here for 6 years and banging this drum, and fortunately, these folks at the medical and the academic institution they've wanted to do it all along, but they've been stopped by somebody else. And you know, we were able to finally get clearance, and so we're going to move forward. So I think we're at the precipice of a complete sea change in this industry. I really do. I think adult use will lead to more normalization as long as the industry is responsible about how they promote it and how the people who are using it promote it. Because, look, I think most people don't want to walk outside of a restaurant and smell somebody smoking a joint. It's just not attractive, and it's not social. You don't sit outside a restaurant with a bottle of wine with your bag on it, right? You just don't do that. So I think there's some social mores that have to become much more normalized, and the community that brought us here and whose shoulders we stand on, I owe a debt of gratitude, but I also think they need to think about strategically how we take this to the next level, and it's by making it more comfortable for people that it's not a stoner product. It's a great plant that has multiple ways to do it, and candidly, you know, one of the things that I'm excited about is whether you're a recreational or what I call lifestyle user or a medicinal user, what you're really trying to do is improve your quality of your life. If you're a lifestyle user, it could be, you know what, I don't want to have a martini at the end of the day anymore. I want something that's going to relax me, take the anxiety down, but not make me inebriated, right?
Hang me over.
Right, or hang me over.
Yeah.
And has no calories, right? So we have the chemistry and the capability now to create those kind of formulations and those kind of products that are very specific to your need. And so our goal is really to understand what Gina needs for her arthritis or you need for whatever, and to then curate products that are exactly what you need, the way you need them, when you need them, including great flower that just you either use it because you think it's better for you for medicinal purpose, because there's a lot of people that who are baby boomers who have been using illegal cannabis to fight pain and inflammation.
Not
and
even
other
knowing
things.
What they're getting in a bag.
Right. Well, no, they knew to some degree because they figured out, you know, they'll get a strain and it'll have certain ash roots and they'll try it and they'll like it. They'll try another one and they'll go back to that one. So they use a kind of a sorting methodology. But the fact of the matter is why would you want to take something that's got a little bit of something in it that's going to help you when you take something that has exactly in the right amount for your physiology, for your size, for your age, for your sex? Because we have that technology, we have that science today. We just haven't applied it to this, as Sol would say, the miracle plant.
Michael Bronfine is here. Wendy Bronfine is here. Gina Schock from the Go-Go's, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, Window Nation, and our friends at Jiffy Lube. We're learning side of this for you.
My mind.
Well, that's where you come in with this, where you're like, I'm in pain. Do you have something? You literally said to Michael before we get, do you have something, right?
Yes, we do.
Here's the thing is that I've tried CBD, and I don't have the right dosage of things, so I just stopped. Because, you know, either you get too high or, like, I don't, what I want is something so that I can wake up every day and not be in pain.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I wake up, I'm in pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I've it's either been too much or didn't
right.
feel it at all, and you know, and then I'd much rather be able to have something I could take because I have a lot of stress in my life.
Right,
that I could use.
Who doesn't today?
yeah, I'm a nervous person.
Oh, are you?
I mean, that's why I play drums. It's like get the energy out and you know and put it do it in a positive way.
Right.
With this overload of energy that I seem to have.
I love your energy. You know.
Yeah. But anyway, geez, this is just fantastic. You're blowing me away, Michael. My God.
Well,
you really know what's good. You've got all the information.
That's why I hang out with these
back
people.
It all up.
I know stuff.
You can back it up.
I have three very intelligent, very focused children who just keep me in line.
Uh-huh.
That's all I do. You know,
whatever it is.
Whatever they tell me I need to do, that's what I do.
I applaud it all. What a wonderful business you're in, and you're doing it for the right reasons.
Yes, that we are.
When you do things for the right reasons, they always work out, I believe. I believe they work
out. Well, I have Wendy on every week. We do this like educational thing, but one of the things, you're rolling out different stuff all the time. And with the law, I mean, just in the 6 months, we go from can't have it to adult use to, okay, now I'm here and I need a balm and I'm getting older and this hurts, or, hey, I want to relax and I'm not sleeping well or my gut's messed up or whatever. I think you're always going to be rolling something new out. I think that's the part at our mm-hmm. young age here. The next 10 years, there's a lot of exciting things that are going to be here 5 years from that aren't here, right? You see this ahead of time, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, we have like what we call like the market-type products, the things that fall into more of the, I'll call it true cannabis sector, with like vapes and resin, flower, all that kind of stuff. And then we have like the science side where that normalization comes in, where we're saying, you know, what we hear all the time is people walk in, they say, they tell you how they want to feel or what they need to fix or what they want, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so rather than being in this generic space of, hey, here's a 5 milligram gummy, let me give you something that might be in that format, but it's exactly in relation to what you just asked for.
Ugh.
I have the anxiety. I don't sleep.
Oh,
this
man.
Hurts. You know,
that'd
most people,
wonderful.
I think, just want, more than anything, the biggest group is stress
yes.
and relax.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yes,
people
yes.
aren't coming in here and dropping $50, $100, and then coming back again a month from now or coming back 2 months from now. So, unless it's working, unless they're getting a mm-hmm. result that they want. It's
correct.
Not an inexpensive product, so therefore it needs to be effective for whatever you're using
mm-hmm.
it for.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to both of us, because I'm about to leave here and go do some yoga, and we're going to wrap things up here, get our crab cakes together. But she's got the shoulder thing and the drummer. I've got the back. I have a L3, L4 issue. They're pointing up here at my drug. Here we go.
What's that say?
Move. Target relief where you need it.
So I have a left
that's
knee.
That's your shoulder, Gina, right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but I have a left knee that has been operated on 4 times from a sports injury, right? And you know what I do at night when I've walked a lot during the day? I take the transdermal gel for Move. I rub it on, and I fall asleep because I have no pain. I don't. If I travel and I don't have it,
now, this is not getting you high, rubbing that on you. I just want to make sure.
No.
Because people really do, at a level, associate anything in this store is going to get me stoned.
Now, look, we have the best flower in the state, bar none. We've won many awards, and we have something called our exclusive brands, which start at 32% THC and go up to 38% THC and from 3% to 5% terpenes. So to give you a sense of that, when I was in college, the stuff that my roommate sold was probably 8% to 10% THC with almost no terpenes in it. And the terpenes are really what gives you the effect. THC is a pain attenuator, right? So if you think about THC, if you don't have pain, you get high. Just like if you take Dilaudid and you're not pain, you get high.
Right.
It's the same thing. It works differently in the brain, but it's the same exact effect, right? So it's a very good pain attenuator. And the question is do you apply it topically? Do you apply it orally or in some other fashion? Inhale it. And it depends on what you're trying to treat. You know, I think that we are still very much in the infancy of this. I'm very proud of what mm-hmm. my team has done and the things that we've created, because they are effective and they're clinically tested and they're proven and people are buying them quite fervently. But we just cracked the surface. I mean, I sat through a meeting 2 weeks ago with our head of product innovation. We have the next 8 quarters planned out of scientific endeavors and product launches for a bunch of really interesting places that I never even thought we'd be we'd be going. And we recently added the world's leading phytocannabinoid plant expert to our scientific board, Dr. Didi Mary from Technion University in Israel. And when I interviewed him, well, I didn't really interview him. After he was came on board, I called him to welcome him to the group. And I asked him why he wanted to work with us when he's renowned. I mean, he is the rock star in phytocannabinoid means plant cannabinoids. That's what the cannabis plant is. And he has a 55-person research lab that has charted all of the cannabinoids. He's the only person in the world that's ever done that. And there's so many of them. There's 167, but probably only about 60 of them are in quantities that they've even begun to understand. So there's a lot of work to be done just in understanding the genetics of the plant and its potentiality for human improvement. But I said to him, like, why would you come with us? You know, you speak everywhere. You're a big deal. He said, it's simple. He goes, I've spent the last X years in this lab trying to figure out how to apply this plant to help people's lives better. You're the only people in America that I've come across that are authentically and legitimately doing it. And so I wanted to associate my science with your applied science and your product development, which obviously was both music to my ears and very, very, very nice to hear.
It's like having a free agent who wants, you know, LeBron's available, come play for you.
Exactly.
Right? Literally,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So, you know.
This is a good sports reference. Yeah. Even you understood that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Kind of.
So, you know, it's very early in the journey, and I think that there's lots and lots to be discovered. I think there's lots of ways to improve the industry professionally and innovatively, and I think those are happening now. And I think the advent adult use, which has opened up the market, has given the industry more capital to put against things like research and product development. Because when the medical market was here, it was a really small market. There's only 160,000 people in it, right? That's not a big market. Now it's 4.5 million in Maryland. Think about that, the difference between the two markets. So now, all of a sudden, your platform, your palate is much bigger.
But somebody who was anti-weed could say, my shoulder hurts, I'm going to stop out and pick up a little something. They don't. No, I always talk to her about Bengay or about absorbing stuff that my dad threw on himself. I don't know whether the hell it worked or not, but this works.
Oh, it absolutely works. Look, you can't get two patents on a product from the U.S. government unless the clinical data supports the delivery system of the patent, right? So we have two patents on our sleep product, Good Night. Not one, but two, right? Why? Because the government looked at the clinical data and said, yes, you have created a novel approach to delivering those chemicals, that compound, those plant elements into the human body in a clinically proven, effective manner, because people are getting more sleep and better sleep when they take your product. I mean, how much better can it be than that? I mean, so for me, that's really where I want this business to be known. This is where we want to take it across the country. We want to lead the pursuit of wellness, not just in terms of, you know, having great products, but really having innovative thinking about everything we do to raise the level of the industry, because the higher it gets, the better it'll be. It's
all right.
Simple.
Well, listen, you guys are both drummers. I want to do you. You did a fantasy camp drum.
Have you
done anything like this, Gina?
Fantasy
camp?
No, I've never done
life
it. You've
is
done
the fantasy.
Kids camps, like any of that
right.
kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I've never been on tour in a rock band, so I'd rather do what she does.
Yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, I bet it has.
Do you feel like you're qualified to be a teacher of drumming, or is it more?
I don't think I am, but I probably am.
I think you are. I watch some of your videos.
I kind of know what I'm doing, yeah.
But know what you're doing and showing somebody else
Dave
how to do
Weckl.
It.
I mean, look, I'm those guys just, you know, my jaw drops when I see them play. I have a certain style that I do very well. I can say my claim to fame is that I'm like a human metronome. My timing is really good.
Which is really important.
I can say that and like feel good about it. Like I'm not bragging, right?
Yeah.
But I
rest
that
in the
is,
memories of your band. Would they agree with that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Can't agree on much, but you keep.
We
time.
Do agree about that. But I've never been. My drumming has always been for the song.
Right.
I've always just. The parts that I come up with are all about what does the song require, and that's the way I approach my drumming. It was never just to sit down and play and do solos. I don't do solos. I just don't. I don't twirl sticks. I don't do any of that. But if you give me a song, I'll put what it needs to
right.
elevate that song to the next level and put the backbone, put that beat that's gonna be perfect for it. That's what I'm good at.
Yeah, but that's what the best drummers do. The best drummers augment the music. They don't that'll, you know, kind of suffocate it.
Yeah, I don't want to step on anything. I just want to. I just want to. I want to make those melodies, soar. I want to give it room to happen and put things in the right place so that the song is at its the highest level you can get it.
I'm gonna break it off here. Let you guys hang out and talk drumming. We're missing eggnog. Happy holidays.
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks for visiting with us and being a part of this.
I got something to tell you.
What do you got?
I got
news.
One more thing.
Breaking news.
Well, actually, it's pretty cool. And it's about the Go-Go's.
Okay.
We are going to, and I didn't even know, we're getting inducted in February 6th, we're getting inducted into the California Hall of Fame, which I didn't even know existed, but like really cool people are in it, from like RuPaul to Joan Didion. It's like really cool. So, and Gavin Newsom is going to, you know, put the medals on us.
That's cool.
And so the five of us are getting together, and we're going to do like three or four songs.
Where is this? Yeah. And what's the date?
February 6th. But I'm not going to have a full kit. It's going to be acoustic, but somewhat acoustic electric. I haven't figured out. I'm not going to be able to have maybe a cocktail kit, something like that. You know, but not a full kit.
But a couple songs.
But
the girls are getting back together. Is what you're telling me?
What are you doing? Why are you saying that?
The girls are getting back together. Is that true?
Talks what's going to happen. I wouldn't say what kind of kit you're going
to
have. Yet.
Yeah. Well, Wendell's trying to.
Okay,
correct
I'm still
me.
Trying to figure it all out. Okay, but we're going to play together.
Good.
And everybody's been busy doing different things.
You still love each other, though. The Go-Go's are still...
Look, you know what? I don't like them all the time, but I always love them.
Well, I love her
it's
shirt.
It's family. It's family.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Gina takes one look at her shirt and says, that's a bootleg shirt right there. That's bootleg Go-Go's
but it,
going on.
But
there.
I like it, though. But it was like a karma thing. Like, that was just so weird.
That's really weird.
I mean, like, the just, you know, imagine the rack. You pull one shirt
so
back and it's looking
and
at me. And
Gina,
I was like,
Gina, how weird do you feel when you see yourself at that age? Put open that up there. There you go.
You look good.
I don't know. I think it's like, yeah, it's my life there. It's cool.
Nice.
I like it.
We got the beat. All right, we're going to step out. We're going to take a break. I'm going to wrap things up here. We're going to be at Wise Markets on Monday. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Wind Donation and our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. Our 25th anniversary is sponsored by Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter. Lots of great things coming up leading up to number one. You don't know this yet, but I've made the announcement today that I'm doing the biggest charity initiative in the history of my 39 years and 32 years of doing this in February. It's going to intersect with this Go-Go's California Hall of Fame thing, but I'll be telling more folks about that, and you guys are going to be a part of it too, and you're going to want to be a part of it.
Great.
Because we're going to feed people, and that's important in the middle of winter. So,
yes, it is.
Wendy, appreciate you. Michael, a pleasure. You should let him come on once in a while.
Okay.
Just let him come on every, like, 10th segment. Every 2 months, I should have you on.
I just want to sit and listen to you.
Yeah, I just want to hang out, and we'll do some more drumming, and I love you, and thanks for buying me a drink on my birthday, you know?
You bet. Anytime I'm around.
I got your crab cake. We're almost even.
we're even,
now,
babe.
Look what I'm going to do. I know you're old and broken down, and you're home and all, but I'm going to take you down to see Child's Play tomorrow night.
Yeah,
you
got to
see the local guys tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I would do that, yeah.
This is
why
East
is
Baltimore. East
Baltimore.
No, see, Wendell's yelling, so he's made. We can't go tomorrow. We got other obligations. You're a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. I got to get you on the schedule ahead of time. Well, thank you. And thank Wendell.
Yes.
And I appreciate you guys. The book's available for the holidays, yes?
Yes. And my photos are available, and my new art on canvas.
You got to see that thing where she's doing the art thing.
Where do we find the art?
No.
What is he saying?
Well, I don't know what he's saying. I can't hear you, babe.
We're
going to take a break. I'm back for more. We're Foreign Daughter. It's the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Thanks to Michael, Wendy, and to Gina. We're wrapping up. It's Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.
Yay.